I don't know when you're hearing this, but it was released on September 11th, 2013. Welcome to Never Forget Radio. You're going to hear a lot of people telling their stories today, their 9/11s, where they were, what they were doing. They'll remember the full names of their classmates or an estranged uncle or a friend of a friend, somebody who knew somebody who died or miraculously didn't die. When I talk about this project, people often tell me their stories, and I hope to do an entire episode one day that's just people talking about their 9/11s. Because it's always been understood as a personalized tragedy, which gives everyone access to a little bit of it. That's one of the assumptions this podcast is predicated upon, that even though so many terrible things have been done in the name of 9/11 and its silenced victims, and it's been commercialized and used to justify wars and repressive policies, that even in a small way, we still own it. And you can reclaim it a little bit just by telling your story.
Oh, it's so hard to remember.
Welcome to Never Forget Radio, where, from the comfort of your own home or your device, and from the safety of the future, we can revisit the memory of 9/11, of George W. Bush, and of all the years associated with both since. It's been over a decade of disappointment, failure, and disaster. I'm no expert, but I'll be your host as we explore our recent past and try to reclaim it. Let's roll. Welcome to part 3 of Empty Sky Rising, a series from Never Forget Radio that examines 9/11 memorials from around the region and the country. For this 12th anniversary, I wanted to take an appreciative look at one of the memorials that I actually like, that I think is a responsible and good work of art. There are so many that I don't like, that are trashy or cliched or worse, martial. And today, September 11th, we'll look at maybe the first 9/11 memorial, which takes the form of two squares of 88 searchlights a block from Ground Zero, beaming their blue light into the sky once a year from sundown to sunrise, from the evening of September 11th to the morning of the 12th. The Tribute in Light. You can read The Tribute in Light as The Towers Are Back for one night only, or The Towers and the People in Them Have Ascended Upward, which is very comforting to some people. You can read them as a blue elegy of sadness or a ghostly echo of the lost buildings, or hope or resilience or defiance surging skywards from the very spot. Like the empty sky it's projected onto, the tribute is a canvas for people to project whatever they want. The artists had a very personal connection to September 11th. They'd actually been recipients of a grant to work in a studio space on the 91st floor of the North Tower, which ran from January to August 2001. Their replacement was actually killed in the following month. His story is so terrible, and his art is so incredible that I hope to do a whole episode one day on sculptor Michael Rinaldo Richards. This personal connection isn't the only thing that sets the Tribute in Light apart from all the rest of the 9/11 memorials. It wasn't intended to be permanent. This was a temporary solution offering quick and immediate relief to shocked and vulnerable people in the understandable time necessary before permanent structures could be planned, funded, built, and dedicated. The whole thing was paid for by donations and state funds and was installed and active by March 2002 for the 6-month anniversary. The tribute was active before the proposals for new buildings, museums, even the official memorials and the three disaster sites were even drafted. And very humbly for a work of art, it was only intended as a temporary memorial to be lit for a month. And then people really responded to it. It was this big comforting thing in the sky that could be seen from so far away. People really fell in love with it. I did. And it was extended for a year, and then 5 years, and then again once a year through the 10th anniversary. It's a very precise collaboration between political power, artistic funding, a private location, and physically specific materials, searchlights which have to be assembled and disassembled once a year. It It's a very expensive work of art to keep up, and it was nearly not renewed for 2012 and 13, and so even though it's scheduled to appear this year, tonight, it's very clear that this memorial cannot be permanent and that one day it will not be lit. And also, even if they find the funds and interest to show it every year for the next 100 years, it was still never conceived to last in that way. And even then it would still be a piece about impermanence, because every morning of the 12th the sun will rise and this will fade, and then be turned off and taken apart until the following year. Like a tree of remembrance that will last only for the lifetimes of the survivors, it fills a purpose for those who need it without burdening future generations. Instead of commanding that we never forget, the tribute in light quietly invites us to remember. More than any other memorial to 9/11, this one is for the present, for the survivors and their memory of the victims, and for all those who experienced the day. Like an illuminated skyscraper, beaming, stripped of its daytime commercial connotations and transformed into a work of art, the tribute in light only exists at night, introspective and quiet, jarring and undeniable, a beacon of regional identity. Like the tragedy it's experienced individually, but collectively individually, from wherever you are already, gaping in the street, hanging on a balcony, or straining at the horizon, it's perfect personalized art for a wounded place. People look at it and for a moment they're in an Edward Hopper painting, lost in exquisite loneliness, all alone in the silent city. The tribute in light is also as temporary as people's memories, and ultimately as impermanent as all the people who were lost. Comparatively, there's an arrogance to memorials that are designed to last forever. They're intended to make permanent the feelings of the affected people, or the fame of the subjects, or the politics of the people who funded them. But in practice, that doesn't happen. Time passes and they're either forgotten, destroyed, or at best they have their meanings changed over time. Even famous places. People don't go to the Lincoln Memorial to remember Lincoln. They go to see the Lincoln Memorial, which is similar now to what Ground Zero has become. There's a difference between planting a memorial tree and building a memorial statue. The tree is more honest. It evokes a stronger emotional reaction because it acknowledges the certainty of change. The tribute in light is not just about past and present grief, but it's also very subtly about aging, fading memory, and future loss. Unlike a monument in stone or steel, which tries to freeze a moment and a feeling in time, promising eternal remembrance, while instead offering the certainty of eternal public irrelevance, this intangible trick of the light is subtle and understated and doesn't offer meaning or interpretation. The physical work is only the 88 searchlights. The beams only appear to form towers if the viewer is sufficiently far away. You can't see the whole picture from Ground Zero. Like a memory, it depends on the distance from the event site to coalesce into meaningful form. There's so much you can read into this memorial, and yet it's so simple that it might seem similar to searchlights announcing a downtown club or movie opening, or the 20th Century Fox logo, or the Luxor Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, whose colonialist, appropriative, and tasteless translucent pyramid features a similar blue beam pointing straight up that can be seen from 100 miles away, the world's largest advertisement. Well, if the tribute in light was located anywhere else, it would be as meaningless and empty as Saturday Night Searchlights or the Luxor Hotel or the nearby New York Hotel and Casino. A couple mega blocks away from the Luxor in Las Vegas, this is a resort which actually is New York themed. They have a Greenwich Village themed food court, a Soho shopping area, a Times Square bar with a dueling piano show and a sax man, a spokesman called Vinny DeMann. This resort is one big meta-mega building, and its external structure takes the form of a faux 1940s version of the New York skyline, complete with a half-sized Statue of Liberty and a lake, a Chrysler building, and a 47-story faux Empire State Building. They've even updated to include some post-9/11 elements, a memorial and a Shake Shack. Although the physical mechanisms of the art is the same, the location of the tribute in light is what allows it to have meaning, unlike these Vegas gimmicks. It's also unusual artistically because it's a site-specific work that's designed for an entire region. It's easiest to see from afar, from Brooklyn or Jersey. I've seen it from where I grew up, White Plains, 30 miles north of Manhattan, from where my father commuted to the World Trade Center. And I've read that you can see the two towers of light from 60 miles away, making this a wonderful work that accurately reflects the regional makeup of the victims and the survivors, the commuters. People who were affected by this tragedy came from a radius around Manhattan that is roughly equivalent to the memorial's visual reach. But the Tribune in Light is not just a memorial to the region and to the commuters, but it's an incredible monument to New York, a city that's constantly changing, a city of immigrants, a city of the future, a city of forgetting, a place that tore down a massive early skyscraper, the Singer Building, the tallest building ever peacefully demolished, and an old Arab American neighborhood to build the original World Trade Center, a place that created an entire new neighborhood, Battery Park City, and the river out of the landfill it dug to support the 100-story towers, a place that started 7 new buildings to replace the 7 original ones. The Tribune in Light is a perfect addition to the Manhattan skyline because it's as impermanent as the buildings that surround it, even though they, like memorials, pretend to be permanent. Whether the tallest building downtown Manhattan is Trinity Church from the 19th century or the former tallest buildings in the world, the World Tribune, Gelender, and Singer buildings all demolished, whether it's the Woolworth Building from 1913 or the 30s banking towers, the gray 70 Pine or the green pyramid of 40 Wall, or the black Rockefeller boxes from the 60s or the Twin Towers under construction in the 70s, all the way on the very edge of the island, incongruous, looking like they'll make it tip over. Or their attendant lackey buildings, the World Financial Center in Battery Park City, or the completed towers and the opening sequences of so many films, whether you remember them on television in flames or falling or not there at all. Or the construction of a new World Trade Center tower, which is taller than the old one. Or the Tribune in Light, which is taller than any building, taller than anything, as tall as art and imagination can make it. The buildings have changed, but the meanings that we ascribe to the skyline in New York are the same. So it's almost like beyond memorializing 9/11, the Tribune in Light also memorializes New York. Because our New York, my New York, and your New York, the New York of everyone is a New York that has changed and is changing too fast to be comprehended. Even people who've just arrive with an older place in their heads and cultural memories that'll never match the one they'll find. If you try to fix a place in place or a time in time, you'll get an empty Vegas simulacrum or a meaningless memorial. And so that's one last meaning that we can all read into the Tribune in Light. Just as it's a statement about our September 11th, our stories, it's also a memorial to our New York of the past that has vanished. And our New York of the present that can't last, that will be built over and bulldozed and relocated and forgotten in a decade, in a year, even tomorrow morning, it'll all be gone. Never Forget Radio is a production of Bookstyle Publications, currently based in West Philadelphia, but always idealizing New York out of all proportion. Music for this episode was provided by Old Table, Cave Cricket, No One and Somebody's. If your publication would like to commission Never Forget Radio to travel to New York, and Las Vegas and write an irritated review in the style of A Supposedly Fun Thing I Would Never Do Again by David Foster Wallace, you can find us on Never Forget Radio on iTunes, Facebook, Gmail, Bandcamp, and Tumblr, and Never Forget Pod on Twitter. All of our episodes can be downloaded for free, but please feel free to donate any amount. Thanks to Miles Donovan and the Daily Robot, who's collaborated with us to create the Manhattan Project, a photo series that imagines the Tribune in Light memorializing many lost New Yorks. Thanks to Emily Friedman, the star of Episode 6, for editing this. Special thanks to Gatsby for inspiring this project 1 year ago during a long phone conversation about the Tribune in Light. Today's quote is from a popular song, New York, New York, it's a hell of a resort, casino, and hotel. Thank you and never forget.